This is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 19, 2016. It's about 2 o'clock. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Sports, Illini Board Enthusiastic About Whitman's Hire. Champaign. Dan Flannel said it took only a matter of seconds for Josh Whitman to grab his attention as a candidate of note in the hunt for a new University of Illinois athletics director. Flannel of Sullivan and the chief judge in the Illinois 6th Judicial Circuit Court was a member of the university's selection advisory committee, and he participated in all of the candidate interviews. Flannel was all smiles Thursday when Whitman was introduced, and he and interim chancellor Barbara Wilson told similar stories of how their time with Whitman held them spellbound. "Before this, I'd never met him," Flannel said. "But he did something no one else did. He walked in and shook hands with a couple of people who met him at the door, and he clapped his hands together loudly and said, 'Let's go. Let's do it.' He had me right there." Wilson said she was enthralled by Whitman's ability to articulate his case. "We were looking for someone who had experience across the board," she said. "Someone who understands the student-athlete experience, who has fundraising experience, someone who has made tough decisions, someone who'd hired coaches, someone who could get in front of the media and actually do a great job of articulating what we're all about. I've interviewed all of the finalists, but I didn't take any notes during the interviews with Josh. I just listened to him and realized I was looking at the next AD right there. He was the full package." Flannel agreed. He also spent his time during Whitman's interview focusing on his sharp answers, not writing down his observations. He said Whitman answered questions differently than other candidates. Almost every other candidate, when you'd ask them a question, "Here comes the answer," deflecting off the fourth word so that they could get to what they wanted to present. But every question you asked Josh, he stopped and thought about it before he gave you an answer. Every single one, he didn't knee-jerk. He gave it maybe 2 seconds, but he gave it time to think about it. Excuse me. He was being cautious, but not overly so. He wasn't going to make a mistake and get blindsided by a question, because some of our questions were kind of designed to do that. Howard Milton was also on the selection advisory committee. He's the associate director of athletics for development, a guy whose livelihood depends on people being inspired to write checks in support of athletics. He, too, was beaming Thursday, in part because the letter Whitman personally penned and sent to the school's iFund members on Wednesday was being celebrated as a direct hit. "He knocked it out of the park," Milton said. "He was absolutely fantastic." Whitman and his wife, Hope, will soon be shopping for a new home in the Champaign-Urbana area. That comes with mixed feelings because they just recently bought a home in St. Louis near the Washington University campus where Whitman served as AD. Ironically, they began moving in November 10th, one day after former Illini AD Mike Thomas was fired. 3 months later, they're going to be packing up and moving out again. Their first date came December 20th, 2014, when Whitman let her know about his allegiance to the Illini. He took her to the Illinois versus Missouri Bragging Rights basketball game in St. Louis. Library reviews city offer. Board eyes cooperation in purchase proposal. With the future of the Decatur Public Library at stake, library board members on Thursday carefully reviewed a lease proposal from the city of Decatur. The city's offer comes in response to a proposal the library board approved in December, and the two differ in several ways that board members found significant. But after nearly 2 hours of discussion, none of those differences appeared to constitute a deal-breaker. "My expectation is that there is nothing here that cannot be resolved, given two positive, cooperative parties working together that want to get something done, and that's my assumption," said John Phillips, library board president. Specifically, one provision would require the city to pay to relocate the library if the city decided to sell the building at 130 North Franklin Street. However, the city removed a proposed requirement that library board members consent to such a sale. Now, unilaterally, if the city would sell the building or a portion of the building, they could relocate the library, said Chris Sudila, the library's attorney. It really puts a lot of that control into the city's hands. Wendy Morthland, the city's corporation council, attended part of the meeting and answered some questions. She said the city would be willing to add language that would require the library to be moved into a similar facility. So, if in fact we have to relocate, which that is not part of the plan, that it would be reasonably similar in size, scope, parking facilities, whatever the concern is, she said. Other major differences concern upcoming capital needs for the library as well as the fate of the library's dilapidated annex building. Under the lease, the city would repair the parking lot area and address the building's HVAC system, but the city's language removed a proposed requirement that the work be completed within a year. The city also struck a requirement to install a video recording security system on the perimeter of the property. Further, the library's proposal called for the city to make a decision about whether to repair or demolish the annex building within a year, and to either demolish the building within 2 years or renovate it within 3 years. The city's proposal would only require it to conduct a study and review of the annex within a year. One major difference that benefits the library is the amount of rent. The city asked for $575,000 annually, including utilities, with an increase of 2.5% allowed every 5 years. The library's proposal had set the rent at a starting point of $615,000 annually, $100,000 annually. Both proposals include the cost of utilities. The negotiations are the latest step in what has been more than a year of uncertainty over the library building's future ownership. A previous agreement that appeared close to completion last spring would have sold the library building to the Decatur Public Building Commission. Macon County offices would have been moved into the library's unused space. But the Decatur City Council declined to approve the deal and in November issued its own offer to buy the building for $10. City officials are seeking a tenant for the unused space. Phillips said he, Sudila, Board Vice President Mark Sorensen, and City Librarian Rick Meyer would plan to discuss the proposal with City Manager Tim Gleason and other city representatives. We've got some issues, clear issues, and we just need to talk things through, with the expectation that they will get resolved, Phillips said. In other business, the board welcomed new member Paula Heinkel, Community Relations Coordinator for Ameren, Illinois, and former WAND-TV reporter. She replaces Sue Crummel, who left Decatur last fall for a job as Vice President of Academic Affairs at Midland University in Fremont, Nebraska. Hospitals seize chance to share resources, improve patient care with BJC. Decatur Memorial Hospital always resisted what DMH President and CEO Timothy Stone Jr. called the urge to merge. While DMH relishes its independence, its leaders also saw the importance of having help when it came to finding the best way to serve its population. On Thursday, Stone announced during a news conference in the hospital's Barnes lobby that DMH had accepted an invitation to join the BJC Collaborative, a collaboration of Health Venture 2. A collaboration of healthcare systems throughout Illinois, Missouri, and eastern Kansas. DMH considered various options for relationships with other hospitals and healthcare systems, with the ultimate goal of better serving our patients and community, Stone said. There will be no change of ownership or governance of DMH, but with the BJC Collaborative, we'll be able to pursue opportunities to reduce cost and improve our clinical in-service performance. BJC Healthcare is based in St. Louis and includes Barnes Jewish Hospital and St. Louis Children's Hospital. DMH became the eighth hospital system to join the collaborative. Memorial Health System in Springfield was one of the original members of the collaborative when it formed in 2012. The collaboration allows members to remain independent, but band together to save money on equipment and supplies, improve access to the health care a patient might need elsewhere, and become more efficient with new Medicare and Medicaid payment methods that demand it. We'll work with the BJC Collaborative to more effectively and efficiently manage population health, Stone said. But it was important to us to remain a reflection of the community we serve. Our patients can expect the same high quality of care they've come to expect for 100 years. And with the assurance that it's going to be around another 100, because we're more efficient in this world of healthcare reform. Initially, the focus will be on finding opportunities to reduce our share costs in supplies, energy management, contracted services, equipment purchasing, and maintenance and information technology hardware and infrastructure. Thus far, the collaborative has resulted in $128 million of savings in the areas of clinical engineering, supply costs, and information technology, BJC Group President Sandra Ventrees said. The next step will be participating in leadership roundtables to share best practices in areas such as regulatory compliance and employee professional development. These activities are designed to bring our top thinkers and leaders into their areas of expertise together to solve problems and address challenges, Ventrees said. Memorial, St. Luke's Health System in Kansas City, Missouri, and Cox Health in Springfield, Missouri, originally joined BJC to form the BJC Collaborative in 2012. Since then, Blessing Health Systems in Quincy, Southern Illinois Healthcare in Carbondale, and Sarah Bush Lincoln Health System in Mattoon have been added. Stone said DMH had previous relationships with the hospitals in the Collaborative. DMH is already a member of Vizient, along with the rest of the hospital systems and BJC. Vizient is a supply chain company that stems from Voluntary Hospitals of America, which DMH has been a part of since the 1970s. Much of the collaboration of services for DMH will be with Memorial in Springfield. Memorial President and CEO Edgar Curtis sponsored DMH's participation in the BJC. Joining BJC is a big deal, Curtis said. We are in Springfield. Like you, Indicator, we realized we weren't big enough alone to navigate population health. We can do it better working together. But if something even more advanced is needed, Barnes Jewish is one of the best hospitals in the country. You want to keep everything you can in Decatur, but there are times you need quaternary services, and they naturally go to St. Louis, Curtis said. Whitmore, Oakley Townships find joint account shortage, Decatur. Tricia Napier, the assessor for Whitmore and Oakley Townships, was arrested for allegedly stealing about $70,000 from the multi-township account, which she used to purchase a prescription pain medication. Napier, 39, was arrested Thursday morning and booked into the Macon County Jail on a preliminary felony charge of theft of governmental property, $10,000 to $100,000. She was released from jail Thursday after posting $2,000 cash bail. Officials from the multi-township assessor's office brought a theft complaint to the Macon County Sheriff's Office on Tuesday. They said they received overdraft notices that the multi-township assessor's account was overdrawn by $800, said a sworn statement by Sheriff's Detective Cody Woods. Napier had been responsible for the finances of the assessor's office and maintained the checkbook for the office since January 1, 2015, the statement said. When a township official went to Napier's office in Oriana, he discovered all the statements for 2015 were missing. Napier later admitted that those statements were all at her residence. A bank official informed him that a recent check had been made out to Napier a Napier relative in the amount of $2,600. Napier later told police she was the only person involved in the thefts. When Napier was questioned by township officials on February 10th on why the account was missing about $70,000 to $80,000, she said she knew and that she was addicted to OxyContin. She was tearful and said she was sorry. She said the cost of the medication on the street was $50 apiece, or as high as $6,000 for a bottle. Sheriff's detectives discovered 88 checks with forged signatures written during 13 months beginning in January 2015. Of those checks, some were legitimate checks for bills. However, she had never been given permission to sign anyone else's name. Napier's annual salary was $20,500. She typically wrote herself a check each month for about $1,500 for her net paycheck. During the year of 2015, she cashed $92,301.54 from the assessor's account. Some of the expenses Tricia claimed were for health insurance, which was not provided for her, and classes and travel for which she overpaid herself. Napier said she is currently in detox and has filed a lawsuit against a hospital from a previous surgery that has caused her to be addicted to pain medication. Napier is the plaintiff in a lawsuit filed in 2013, according to the Macon County Circuit Clerk's website. That case is ongoing with a pretrial hearing set for May 16th. Napier is due in circuit court for her arraignment in her criminal case March 18th. Page 2. State Museum Bill Fails Vote. Springfield, a Democratic state senator from Macoupin County, is planning a new effort to reopen the shuttered Illinois State Museum after an attempt to override a mandatory veto from Republican Governor Bruce Rauner failed. Rauner closed the museum last fall as a cost-saving measure, but unionized employees have continued reporting to work after they contested their layoffs. The governor and the Illinois Department of Natural Resources announced a plan earlier this month to reopen the main museum and two satellite facilities while permanently shuttering two others, including the Southern Illinois Art and Artisan Center at Rend Lake. The plan called for beginning to charge admission fees and ramping up private fundraising efforts. Rauner crafted the plan by using his amendatory veto power to rewrite a bill that simply required the state to operate the museum and the four branches to keep them open to the public. The General Assembly would have had to vote to accept those changes. But State Senator Andy Menard, Democrat of Bunker Hill, the sponsor of the original bill, on Wednesday called on his fellow senators to rescind Rauner's changes because he said the governor exceeded his constitutional authority to rewrite legislation. The Senate voted 32-15 on the override, four votes short of the threshold, effectively killing the bill. "My goal has always been to reverse the action taken by the governor. That's been my goal all along," Menard said. The governor rewrote a bill that the legislature passed in a bipartisan vote. There was no way ever the legislature was going to accept that. No way. He said he now plans to draft a new bill that will incorporate the admission fees and private fundraising called for in the governor's plan, steps he said Rauner could have taken months ago without legislation. For his part, Rauner said his changes to the bill were well within the authority given to him in the Illinois Constitution. "I think what we did is absolutely constitutional, and it's the right thing to do," he said Thursday. "We don't want to have the museum closed. I certainly don't. I don't want to see any of our services cut, but we've got to come up with a way to pay for it." Giraffes everywhere. Head Start Literacy Night draws families. Decatur, the New Horizon Family and Child Development Center of the Anna Waters Head Start program appeared to be overrun Thursday evening by giraffes. What was actually happening, however, was a family literacy night centered around the children's book Giraffes Can't Dance by Giles Andre, A pair of toy giraffes, along with a larger one, hand-painted on a nearby window, for example, greeted preschoolers and their families at the check-in table. Guests were also invited to make giraffe faces out of paper plates as one of three hands-on activities. Finally, everyone got to hear the story in the gymnasium, and each family got to take their very own copy of the book home. "This is really keeping all the kids entertained," said Ashley Vondra Rayleigh, who had a child at Anna Waters for the past 5 years and brought the children to prove it. They were Cadence, Jasmine, Michael, and Carmen Eckhart, ages 8, 7, 6, and 4. "I want Miss Latanzia to see the three older ones. She hasn't seen them in a while," Vondra Rayleigh added. The proud mom was referring to Latanzia Lee, one of several teachers who organized Thursday's festivities. "We like to get families out and get them engaged," Lee said. "We do three literacy nights a year." Thursday's was especially popular, starting as it did with the KFC chicken dinner before families were invited to decorate and eat cookies, color masks, and make paper plate giraffes together. Organizers estimated about 150 people turned out. I think maybe it was the fried chicken, Lee said. Jessica Small and daughters Auteria, 8, and Ayana, 5, had fun making giraffes, even when Auteria wanted to trade finished products with her mom when everything was said and done. Maisha Campbell brought her 3-year-old son Jerry, who is in his first year at Anna Waters Head Start and enjoyed putting the pieces of the giraffe face together. "This is very helpful," Campbell said. "It's amazing the different learning activities you can do with your kids." In local briefs, AARP driver safety. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital is hosting a driver safety course from 8:30 to 4:30 p.m. Tuesday, March 1st in Conference Room 561. The course is approved by the state of Illinois to keep up to date on new information in driver safety. Sponsored by the AARP, this course could qualify attendees for auto insurance discounts. There are no tests and lunch is provided. The cost is $15 for AARP members and $20 for non-members. For more information, contact Margie at 217-464-2046. That's Margie at 464-2046. Seniors' property taxes. The 2016 Senior Citizens Assessment Freeze Exemption forms for property taxes, which must be filled out annually, are now available at most area banks, credit unions, libraries, and post offices. For income eligibility and help completing the form, bring your 2015 income information and form to the Macon County Supervisor of Assessments Office, Macon County Office Building, Suite 401, 141 South Main Street. That's Macon County Office Building, Suite 401, 141 South Main Street. Youth ice hockey. Children ages 4 to 9 can try ice hockey for free at a special clinic at 8 a.m. Saturday, February 20th at the Decatur Civic Center. The event is sponsored by the Decatur Youth Hockey Association. To register, go to www.tryhockeyforfree.com. That's all one word, tryhockeyforfree.com. Springfield Sheriff Scholarships. The Illinois Sheriff's Association is awarding $54,000 in college scholarships to students throughout the state wishing to pursue higher education during the 2016-17 academic year. Applicants must be permanent Illinois residents and enrolled as a full-time student. Scholarships can only be applied to tuition, books, and fees. For more information, contact your local sheriff's office, high school advising center, or college financial aid office. Decatur, Mini Maker Volunteers. The University of Illinois Extension is looking for volunteers for its Decatur Mini Maker Fair on Saturday, April 9th. Volunteer shifts are 3 hours or less, and several roles are available. All adults and youth are encouraged to sign up. No prior experience or knowledge is needed to volunteer. Register online at go.illinois.edu/DMP. That's go.illinois.edu/DMP. By Tuesday, March 1st, to receive a free Decatur Mini Maker Fair volunteer t-shirt to wear during the event. For more information, call Samantha at 217-877-6042. That's 877-6042. In government and politics, budget discussions have begun for Decatur Township. Decatur Township has reached stage one of discussion on its next budget. A depleted Board of Trustees met Wednesday night to hash out details for its upcoming fiscal year that begins April 1st. Township Supervisor Lisa Stanley and Trustee Michael Smith were not present. Trustee Amy Ruff said after the meeting that she was excited to get started on the budget and to set up a guideline for further discussions. "We're wrapped up on stage one of this," she said. "We just want to go through the budget lines and see where we can find some savings." Officials said that they expect the upcoming spending blueprint to be similar to the current year's $2.49 million budget, which covers the township, general assistance, and cemetery departments. There were some tentative reductions made by the trustees in minor funds, but one notable tentative increase is the potential return of the Social Service Fund. The board has budgeted $20,000 a year to give to agencies that applied, though such a fund was eliminated in this budget year in a cost-saving move. Agencies that previously received money included Meals on Wheels and Oasis Day Center. The budget discussions were incomplete, though, as the board did not yet have the tentative budget from the road commissioner. There was also no discussion on the general assistance budget, as board members said it would be better to have that with Stanley present because the supervisor is head of the department. Roof said that after the meeting that board members would like to a smaller budget, would like a smaller budget as compared to last year, but said it was not a set goal and they would focus most on making sure money was being well spent. The board is expected to continue discussions during its March meeting, with officials hopeful on a tentative budget that can be passed that night. A final budget is expected to be passed in April. Smoking age could be raised to 21. Springfield, a group of health organizations, said raising the legal age for purchasing tobacco products in Illinois from 18 to 21 could drastically reduce smoking among young people and cut into the $2 million the state's Medicaid program spends annually on tobacco-related health problems. American Lung Association spokeswoman Kathy Dre said that while there's no single magic bullet to reduce tobacco use, Illinois has taken many steps in recent years to do so, including increasing taxes and banning smoking in public buildings and on campuses of public colleges and universities. Raising the legal age for purchasing cigarettes and other tobacco products, including electronic cigarettes, is the next logical step, supporters say. State Senator John Mulroe, Democrat of Chicago, is sponsoring a bill to do just that. "We know that smoking cigarettes can kill you," Mulroe said Thursday at a State House news conference. "And if it doesn't kill you, it can harm or damage your heart, your lungs, and/or your kidneys." Supporters cited that a 2015 study from the Institute of Medicine found that raising the smoking age to 21 would reduce smoking among 15 to 17-year-olds by 25% and among 18 to 20-year-olds by 15%. The report also notes that 90% of adult daily smokers began before age 19. "Many young smokers get their cigarettes from peers who are of legal age," said Dr. Ronald Johnson, a physician from Pittsfield and a past member of the Illinois Academy of Family Physicians. "Raising the legal age could cut that supply line," Johnson said. Well, that's all we have time for in the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. We'll return with the second half hour briefly. This is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review dated February 19th, 2016. Please stay tuned.